US psychologist Dr. Helen LaKelly Hunt is not only co-founder of one of the most successful therapy institutes, Imago Relationship Therapy, and married to the other co-founder, Havel Hendricks. She's also a leading feminist and founder of the Sister Fund, among other women's funding initiatives. As a result of that work, she's an inductee in the American National Women's Hall of Fame. Her philanthropic efforts include, most recently, co-founding Women Moving Millions, which is an organisation which aims to persuade wealthy women to donate money to women in need. It began in 2006. Dr. Helen LaKelly Hunt joins me now. Hello.
Hello, Kim.
Now, how did that fund go, Women Moving Millions? You had a target, I think, of, what, 150 within 3 years?
Yes, we did a fundraising initiative about 2 years ago, giving ourselves, it ended 2 years ago, and we gave ourselves a target of 150 million. We were connected to a network of women's foundations around the world that had raised in the last 20 years 800 million in grants and assets. And we wanted the 850 million. And we thought that we would bring in some high net worth women and raise 150 million to take us crashing through the $1 billion mark. And we did it. And we were hoping to succeed. We planned the campaign, but then the economic collapse came, the global economic softening, and we were afraid we wouldn't reach our goal, but we, in fact, crashed through the $1 billion mark and made it to $180 million raised.
And is this is 180 rich women writing you a check for $1 million each?
That's right.
Good Lord. So where's the money going?
Well, it's going to people on the ground in crisis, like today, the women who are supporting women and girls would be responded to. Women really respond quickly and smartly in a crisis. But there are 400 million women and girls sold in forced prostitution around the world, and we're stopping trafficking. We are working on economic development for women. And we also like the idea of working women and men together, lifting up not only women's voices, but men's voices as well.
I was going to ask you, because you've said that the grants generally, should be given to women, not men, because women know how best to spend the money. And I suspect that a lot of men would object to that.
Yeah, the exciting thing is women and men in partnership. I think women have been frustrated to be left out of the dialogue about money. I was raised in Dallas, Texas, into an oil family. Kim, did you ever see the TV series Dallas?
I did.
On TV? Okay, well, that was sort of my family.
And H.L. Hunt.
That's right. And so it was my dad, H.L., and my brothers that ran the money, and the women were not supposed to have any say in the money. And so I was raised with that ethic. And, you know, after a while, the men's, we had great women in the family with great values, and families, values about family, values about the next generation, but they didn't have access to the money and weren't shaping the family values. And
so the essentially the men wrote all the checks and the women did the shopping.
Yes, and I began to feel that is just a tragedy. That is
why
that
did
is
you get
right.
to feel that?
Well, actually, I married a man that I was expected to marry, who would be the businessman.
Expected to marry?
Yes, as a woman in a high net worth family, you're scripted to go out and find a man who is good at business, so your husband will join the family business. And so that's what I did.
Very, so it was, as near as damn it, an arranged marriage.
It's one way to say it. Another part of me just felt so disassociated from money, and I think I was seeking some way to connect by marrying a businessman, but it did not work in our case. When we were engaged, my father called my fiancé into his office and had a long talk with him, and when he came out, I said, hey, what did Dad talk to you about? And he said, oh, nothing. And I said, no, I really want to know. What was it? This three-hour meeting. He said, well, he told me about your financial picture. And I said, really? What did he tell you? And he said, oh, he told me about trust and your net worth and things. And I said, I've never had that discussion with him. I said, yeah, would you tell me? And so, and then he offered my husband a place in the company, and he'd never offered it to me. So, and I began to see real problems with that. It can look benign on the surface, but men alone, I don't think, know how to be as wise with financial stewardship as if women are beside them. So we are excited in the women's movement about moving to the stage where men and women work together.
Had you, as it were, discovered feminism before you took that stand, or did you take that stand in the process of this? Because you and your sister, Swanee, I think, shared that opinion, didn't you?
Yes, I hear that you ask excellent questions, and no one has ever asked me that. And it's a fabulous question. And the answer is no, I had not discovered feminism. But my marriage ended very sadly in a divorce. And I realized part of our problem was that I knew nothing about money. And so when I heard about women's foundations, these little institutions that pull women together across race, across class, across socioeconomic to fund women and girls, I thought, what a great corrective to men being in charge of the money, that this is women. And rather than women blaming men for doing it wrong, they were striving to roll up their sleeves and pool money to go to women and girls' issues. You've probably heard the statistics from the World Bank that women do two-thirds of the world's work, receive 10% of the world's salaries, and own only 1% of the land or the means of production.
Whereas in the United States, I think 51% of all assets are held by women.
Yes.
Or in the names of women.
In the names of women.
That's a different thing, isn't it?
And it is. And the means of production, that 1%, is still very, very small. And we're addressing the issue that 78% of the people in the world, in poverty, 78% of the people in poverty are women and girls. But only, when I got involved, only 2% of the philanthropic funding went to women. So I got interested in the fact that women were beginning to wield financial clout. And when I got involved 30 years ago, these were small women's funds, but there's now a global network of 130 women's funds, and they're building muscle. And there is a really, and they're shifting the sense that women are victims, and more people are realizing that women are the assets. They're part of the solution to making a community economically secure.
I suppose hitherto, one of our ideas of what rich American women gave their money to was museums and cultural issues such as that. You want to persuade women that there are better areas to put their money?
Actually, shame is a word I'm real comfortable with. I want to shame women. And again, Kim, you're very tuned in here, because what happened after working to help raise money for these women's funds for many years, I took out time to do doctoral studies, and I studied suffrage, and I did a dissertation on the fact that I found some letters of suffragettes who, in the United States, it took 70 years to get suffrage, and these suffragettes were brilliant. They were so eloquent. They were marching in the snow. They were dragged to prison. They were force-fed. They were doing hunger strikes, and they were force-fed. You know, just like here in Australia, brilliant. I mean, us and New Zealand, both. So, did you know the women here in New Zealand, I think, got suffrage before anybody? But anyway.
Well, I did, actually.
Valiant women.
Listen, so absorbed in our conversation, am I, that I have left it late to go to Stuart Keith for a civil defence update. Just stand by for a moment, Stuart.
This follows the earthquake and tsunami in Japan. The New Zealand Tsunami Experts panel assessment is that there is a marine and minor land threat only for parts of the upper North Island coast of New Zealand. The first waves are recorded at North Cape at 7:10 this morning. Initial wave heights were about 15 centimetres, but civil defence says over the past half an hour they've risen to 30 to 40 centimetres. Higher waves are expected to follow in the next few hours based on their modelling. The New Zealand Tsunami Expert Panel assessment is that there is a marine and minor land threat only for parts of the upper North Island coast of New Zealand. So based on real-time tsunami modelling in comparison with historical events, the interpretation is that a minor land threat, i.e. wave heights of just over 1 metre, now exist in Northland between Ahipara and the Karikari Peninsula, as well as in the Bay of Islands and the Chatham Islands. A minor land threat means there is a small potential for impacts on beaches in these areas. Unusual tidal surges may also be observed in other parts of the country. People on coastal areas should stay off the beaches, stay out of the water. That's the sea, the river, estuaries. This includes boating activities as well. Do not go sightseeing, please. Share this information with family, neighbours and friends, and listen to the radio for updates. It's 19 after 9.
No, I think that gives you the answer to the World Foods Festival question, the precautionary approach. Please, I'm talking to Dr. Helen Lakelly-Hunt, who is co-founder of Women Moving Millions. We were talking about where exactly the money goes. Oh, can you give me the most recent places and stories?
Well, Kim, if you don't mind, I'd like to finish the point I was making.
Sorry.
And I'm sorry that I was along. But
it is not your fault. Suffrage, we were
speaking
of.
Yes, women were working so hard for suffrage. And what I discovered in my doctoral studies were some letters of the suffragettes saying, why is there yet another article in the paper today of a wealthy woman who left a bequest to a museum? Why do wealthy women fund their husband's alma maters, colleges for boys exclusively, religious institutions where they have no voice, and they fail to fund suffrage? And so I did the research that in the 19th century in the United States, wealthy women were funding museums and the ballet while suffrage was going on. And the middle class and the working class were funding suffrage, and they didn't have much money. And thus, this hugely important movement to get full democracy in the United States, you'd think that in a democracy, women were taxed, but they couldn't vote. So it was basically taxation without representation. Wealthy women were sitting on the sidelines. So, Kim, I like to use shame when I talk to women and go, in the last century, the women sat out of the hard work. And we have the money. We have the power. So now the wealthy women are waking up. It's a big, exciting wake-up call for us all.
Just as a matter of interest, I mean, I get the impression that trying to take the stand coming from a family such as the Hunt family in Dallas was a little like leaving a religion. Do you know what I mean? Was it hard for you to change the way you operated?
Well, I work with Abby Disney, whose great uncle was Walt Disney.
Yes.
And she woke up and now is doing million-dollar gifts around to these women's funds and beyond. And she said it was like leaving the Magic Kingdom, that she had been raised to be in the fairyland. And in Snow White's castle, and she left the castle, and she entered the real world. And it is so rewarding to roll up your sleeves and link arm in arms with women and with men who care about women and do significant work in the world.
How did your family deal with your new position, as it were?
Well, there was a lot of silence, and I actually, there's several, there's my father, and then there are quite a few Hunt brothers, and there are three families.
And my family. H.L. was quite busy, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. And my brother, who currently heads Hunt Oil, has really been wonderful. He is intrigued with the growth of this movement.
Well, that's one person. What about the rest?
Oh, well, of course, the women are excited.
There's a brother and the women.
Any
other men on your side?
Yes, my beloved husband. But, Kim, your question's a good one. You know, this used to be radical. Yeah, but now.
Yes.
What's happening is this is mainstream. Ban Ki-moon, the UN Secretary General, is saying, if we, I have a quote of his, if we invest in women and girls, it has a multiplier effect on productivity. It is strategic. If we make a woman secure, we build a sustainable community.
And whereas what? Whereas if you make a man secure, what happens?
Well, I haven't studied the research real carefully, but apparently when men get money, they will fund things of interest to them, and it's not so much about children and family and education for the next generation. It's more lasered into a personal interest. But women, they'd fund their children before themselves, as you know. So it's a different mindset. And that's why Goldman Sachs, 4 years ago, started a huge initiative for women and girls around the world, and J.P. Morgan is getting interested, and this is beginning to be. We've moved out of the era that funding women is marginalized, or it's now becoming very mainstream and excitingly so.
And so, give me some idea of the projects that you're seeing.
Well, I love Kay Rita Anderson in Atlanta, Georgia, who, when she found out that Atlanta had one of the highest entry rates of prostitution, she of girls being prostituted, she just stood up and stamped her foot and put her hands on her hips and went, stop it, we got to stop this. And so she's just herself with $1 million. She's gone out and seated within this whole network of women's funds, women saying stop it to prostitution. Girls were sold on Craigslist, and she has created a huge petition and gotten work all throughout the United States to get the sale of girls for prostitution off of Craigslist. And this is one woman working now with a network of women's funds to make this happen. A friend of mine, Jackie Zahner, is beginning to lobby for all Wall Street firms should have 50% women on the boards. There's a woman named Carol Schwartz in Australia, and she too believes women should be focused on in business. We ought to get smart, and we ought to make sure that the voices of women are out there.
Do you think that a woman who writes a $1 million check to women making millions means that a lot of other charities no longer get money?
Oh, gosh, your questions are great. It's actually the opposite, Kim. They don't write a check to Women Movie Millions. If a woman is funding these other groups at the $1 million level, then all she has to do is say, look what I have funded. And if she's funding at the $1 million level, then she's a part of Women Movie Millions. If she over years has given to women and girls, it counts.
I'm not sure whether that answers my question. I mean, if I'm going to give, if I were in a position to give, you know, $500 here and $500 there and $500 somewhere else to all sorts of different organizations, I don't think I'll do that now. I'll just write a big fat $1 million check to Women Moving Millions.
Well, Women Moving Millions doesn't take the money. You would fund the Global Women's Foundation.
And
you
do I have any say, having written
yes,
that?
Yes, entirely. Yeah. It's not a fundraising organization.
It's a distributing organization.
No, we don't distribute. We track women who have put $1 million into women and girls organizations or organizations that advance women and girls. For example, let me mention that if your interest is in healthy women giving birth to healthy children, 1,500 women a day die from pregnancy or childbirth complications. And so if your interest is to come in, and many of these complications are preventable. And so if you care about this issue and you go in and decide over 10 years, I'm going to do $100,000 a year to help this problem in the world.
Yeah.
Or it could be a combination of problems. If you want to set up a women's scholarship fund at your university, Or if you're at the symphony and you believe more women and girls should be, low-income women and girls should hear the symphony, set up a scholarship fund at a symphony. And if you cobble together all of your giving and it equals $1 million, then all you have to do is provide the records and you're a part of Women Moving Millions.
Gotcha. It's interesting that the economic collapse didn't affect your fund.
It's fascinating. We were the most successful fundraising initiative during that period. Barron's every year, that London paper, is it London, comes out and does the top 20 philanthropies in the world. And last 2 years ago, or maybe it was last year, we were number 9 of the most successful. They ranked them in order, the most exciting philanthropic initiatives. And we were on the list of 20, there were only 2 that were women-led.
Any explanation as to why you weren't affected by the downturn?
I think it's just that the consciousness broke suddenly that high net worth women had been sitting on the sidelines. And that is not okay, Kim. That is not okay. And there's sort of this, in families of wealth, sometimes there's this subtle way to keep women disempowered from the money. And once women saw other women stepping up and taking control, these women said, I can do that too. And they rolled up their sleeves and went to work.
Mm. Microfinance is the big talk now.
Yes.
And that seems to channel money,
yes,
to women quite specifically. Are you involved in that in a big way?
Absolutely. That's one of the projects I should have mentioned. Mm. Absolutely. It's the Grameen Bank model is a proven track record. You loan women money. If you give them micro loans, they have by far the better success rate at turning that money into productivity. I'm sure you've seen the statistics that this micro lending works best when it is put in the hands of women, as opposed to men.
I'm talking to the US psychologist, Dr. Helen LaKelly-Hunt, about, well, primarily about Women Moving Millions, which I'd hazard a guess is one of the most successful fundraising efforts around, isn't it?
It's considered the most successful fundraising initiative for women in the history of the world. and yes, it is really picking up steam to be one of the most successful. I mean, we're just getting started. We've just started. I'll mention, I was in Australia with Eve Malab from the Australian Women Donor Network last week, and she said something so interesting, that there have been 3 waves of feminism. First, women getting the vote, being able to have a voice in the culture. Second, jobs for women, like, you know, when women said, you know, we can work outside the home and inside the home, and then working for equal pay. And third, the issue of money. Women taking control of money and beginning to wield financial clout. And so that is what is happening, and we're just getting started. I mean, it's not rocket science. People wake up and go, yeah, it's time. Especially with the global collapse, the economic softening, the economic dislocation, or whatever you want to call it. I mean, clearly, men need our help, Kim, right? I mean, Christine knows that.
Yes.
Let's pull together and make this happen.
I'm not sure whether it was you or whether it was Gloria Steinem, who's has been one of your advisors, the Women Moving Millions Fund advisor. One of you said that you're changing the paradigm. There, I've said it. I always swore to avoid that word. Is the masculinization of wealth and the feminization of poverty.
Yes, isn't that brilliant?
Yeah.
Yes, as long as men are in control. And that's the exciting thing, then, is moving into partnership with men. And I just want to say I'm so proud of my husband, Harville, because may I say a word about what my parents' marriage was like?
Yes.
My father, yes, was very busy, but when my mother called my father Popsy. I've never heard her use my dad's first name.
What was his first name?
Haroldson. Haroldson Lafayette Hunt. But for her, she was so, the relationship was so fragile. He had the money, he had the power, and there was this sort of top-down dynamic where Dad said to all of us, hey, none of you, I don't like the TV. The TV's an idiot box. You can't watch TV, but you can watch one show a week. And at the time, I don't know if you got it here in New Zealand, it's called Father Knows Best. And so that's the one every week he would have us watch that show. And like it's like the man knew what to do in the house and the woman was subservient. And Harville and the Imago Theory and Peter and Brenda here in New Zealand, they are heading up a way that you can have a partnership marriage for men and women. And
you're so good because, you know, I was trying to work out a way of going from the very, very worthwhile Women's Funding Network and Women Moving Millions to Harville and the Imago Relationship Therapy Institute.
Yes, but this is the cutting edge of feminism.
And you made that bridge for me. Thank you.
Well, we're a good team, Kim.
Yeah.
But it really is. I mean, this is really the cutting edge of feminism. When marriages can be really equal, partnership marriages, and then when marriages become partnership marriages, it helps bring collaboration and relationship skills throughout the world. Once you can have a healthy relationship with the jerk you're married to, you know, you fell in love with them and then you feel like, why does this woman do this? Why does this man do this? I mean, you're just frustrated.
What does he do that really annoys you?
Who, Harville?
Yeah.
Well, are you free tonight? I'll meet you for a drink. But actually, I have learned to translate that, you know, anything, any annoyance into curiosity. I wonder why he's doing that. And ask him and get, and then, and I've become empathic on things that used to frustrate me. I've developed empathy. But anyway.
But one of the rules of the whole Imago relationship thing is no criticism, right? No criticism.
Correct.
So when you say, Harville, darling, why don't you change your socks every day? That may sound like curiosity, but actually it's criticism, right?
You know, Kim, you're right. And I saw the women.
Yeah, but hey, I'm single.
I can probably change that too. So we could talk later. But because I'm a great matchmaker. But I will say I watched the women movement whine and complain about what they weren't getting, but I didn't see the women's movement learning to ask cleverly and wisely for what they wanted. And it's the same in a marriage. More and more, the women's movement is saying, this is what we want, and we'd like to work with you, and this is what we deserve. And in a marriage, it's not about listing what the complaints are. It's about asking for what you want in a way that you get what you want. And it's like an intelligence test, and you can do it.
Just as a matter of interest, while we're talking about feminism and marriage, were you given away when you married Harvey?
You mean did my dad?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He did?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, those subtle things, subtle ways that women are objectified.
Do you have a daughter?
4.
Are they going to be given away or have they been given away by their father?
No. Let's see, one did. But anyway, I have 4 feminist daughters.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing, though, isn't it? I mean, at what point does oppression and subjection, as symbolized by giving away a woman to the groom by the father, become a quaint and endearing custom?
Yes, and more, actually, more and more, the father and mother is walking the bride down the aisle.
Yes.
In the United States, and, yeah. and even in clusters.
Harville is Oprah Winfrey's favorite relationship expert, I understand.
Oh, yes.
That must be quite useful.
That's it. Bingo.
Yes.
To say the least, Harville, when Getting the Love You Want was published.
You co-authored Getting the Love You Want with him, did you not?
Actually, not on the cover, but I did.
Ah.
I have a master's in counseling psych, and Harville created the theory, but I was, let's say, the world's best dialogue partner for him.
Did you get the master's in counseling psych before or after you met him?
Before.
Okay, so you had a meeting of minds already.
Yes, and was halfway through a PhD in clinical psych.
Ah.
And so I cannot tell you the honor it's been to be beside Harville as Getting the Love You Want was written. And 4 months after it was written, Oprah read it and called him. And his show won Oprah her first Emmy. And we were told recently it was the first time she had had an author on her show, and that probably seeded the idea of the book club.
Goodness.
But yeah, he's been on 19 times.
Goodness. The theory behind Imago, and I know that I'm simplifying it here, is that marriage or partnership helps us finish or heal our childhood things. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, that's correct.
So does that mean that your first marriage, for example, did that not work because you didn't address it in that fashion, or did it work in that it did that job?
The former.
It didn't work because you didn't approach it in that fashion.
Yes. I also didn't speak up. I didn't assert in a gracious way, a gracious, clear, strong way, what I needed and wanted in the marriage.
Before you got married, you mean?
No, during the marriage.
So
I never saw my mother speak up and say what she needed or wanted in the marriage. So women were very in a high net worth family, and that in the Dallas TV show, women, you know, they didn't know how to relate well to men.
So if you had read Getting the Love You Want before you got married, the first marriage, would it have worked?
Yes.
Or would you just not have married him?
Harville and I agree on 98% of things. There are only like 2% of things we don't agree on. But
exploring that 2%.
One of the things we both wholeheartedly agree on is that every marriage can be saved. That if you're married and you get the right help, every single marriage can be saved.
Really?
Yep. Yeah. If you cared enough about someone to marry them, I mean, you may think, oh, it was a moment of passion, da da da. But if you were drawn to somebody, and you made a commitment, we have the technology to end divorce on the planet. So, it's there. We can do it. We just don't market it as well as we should.
Every marriage can be saved. I'm giving you an opportunity to qualify that, because some people marry the wrong people.
Well, not in our opinion. We think that if they learned to approach. I mean, why did they? Why would an adult marry the wrong person?
Stupid.
No. Go to www.relationships.co.nz.
Are you saying that people do never marry the wrong person?
That's my opinion.
Oh, my
and Harville's.
Goodness.
You talk about transformation. If you can shift being married to that jerk, that self-absorbed, rotten, selfish person, if you can, there is a way to approach that person where not only does their life transform, but you transform your own life. I mean, you can become a psychological and spiritual giant by practicing every day learning to love your partner. And it is so much fun.
It sounds
exciting.
Like very hard work.
Oh, it is. But once you have the breakthrough, it is fabulous. And it is worth it for the kids.
Just as a matter of interest, because I'm a negative sort of pessimistic person, I need to explore the 2% that you and Harville don't agree about.
Oh, yeah. I really hate to waste the time. But I'll say real quickly, Harville believes that we're all born good, and I feel like we're not all, I mean, sort of like original wholeness versus, I mean, I just hit the,
whoa.
I sort of.
That was good resonance.
Yeah, I'm sort of stretching here because I don't have the words for it, but I believe that on our own, we are selfish, and Harville thinks on our own, we're really good, that society has made us selfish.
I don't think that's a waste of time. I think to explain that, I think that that's very useful.
I mean,
that's obviously, do you talk about that?
Well, I'd rather talk about what works, because there is so much that does work. And so To me, that's more interesting.
All right. Well, I'll give you the opportunity to tell me the most important thing that works because you've got 30 seconds.
Well, it's using the pain in your relationship as a breakthrough moment to get to the glory. Harville and I used to have the worst marriage in the world. We went to a therapist and they called us the couple from hell. But we finally started applying the system and we have the best marriage in the world. And that's a story that if we could do it, you could do it.
That's a very nice note to end on. It's been lovely talking to you. Thank you, Dr. Helen LaKelly-Hunt.
Thank you, Kim.
Who is a U.S. psychologist and the woman behind an extraordinary foundation called Women Moving Millions.